next case is 99-1129, Michael Kemeter versus McDaniel Backhoe Service.
Subcontractor in a terrible position at the beginning of a case. you have to wait and see how the case is going to come out. Let's suppose you have a contract that's void or arguably void.
But they have to wait anyway because let's say they drafted this property, okay? No question it was properly drafted, the whole market. They don't know whether they're indemnified until the end of the case anyway because they don't know if the jury is going to find them liable or not.
If it's a clearly drafted, they will know. If it says that the general contractor will be responsible for his negligence or its negligence, and the sub is responsible for their negligence, there's no issue.
Yeah, but you still don't know whether you're going to pay the other person's attorney fees because you don't know what the jury's going to decide about their negligence.
But you can make a determination in the beginning, as you can make a decision. Do I want to assume the defense of the general? Do I want to settle the case? In other words, this could be handled by a motion during the trial court process, early in the proceedings. In other words, if you have an ambiguous, questionable provision, then you can simply file a motion and ask for the judge to decide based on the contract. The point is, you have to look at the contract on its face. It's just contract instructions. Whether or not the contract provision is enforceable should not depend on the outcome of the case. Let's suppose...
Your interpretation of this contract that if the general had caused the harm here, your client could have been sued and made it pay?
The general? No. No, we would not have made it pay. But the better approach would have been to decide it early on. The problem with the approach espoused by the appellee, by the...
What is it that this asks you to indemnify that's against the law?
The provision asks them to indemnify for any damages, including attorney's fees, arising out of any of the work. But some of the work was their work and other subcontractors, not ours. Now, the problem is you could have situations where let's assume that the general contractor is negligent. Clearly negligent. Well, under the 12th District's holding, if they are dismissed for some other reason, let's say the plant misses the statute of limitations, or let's say the plant was 90% negligent and they were only 10% negligent, so they have no liability. Under that reasoning, under the appellee's reasoning and the 12th District, I would then have to pay their attorney's fees. Even though it may have been a void contract, and even though they may have been negligent.
Is there something here that's fact specific to this contract?
In what sense?
In terms of what we have to hold on to, like,
I think it's the process that we're looking at, and whether or not you can simply, as we would say, take the contract on its face and decide if it's void under the statute. Or do you have to wait and see how the case moves out? And the better approach, in our judgment, is to allow that determination to be made on the face of the contract. If there's a dispute, the parties can find it out at the beginning. It puts the subcontractor in a very difficult position. Let's say in the beginning, nobody thinks anybody
has a legal proposition that would be a help to others.
Yeah, the proposition would be that a hold harmless provision which violates 2305(3)(1) on its face is void regardless of the outcome of the litigation. That way the parties can assess their risk early on. Let's say both of the defendants, the general and sub, both say we're not negligent. Well, it puts the sub in a very difficult position.
If this is void, if you're in fact out of them, your client would still be stuck for the damages as this case, given where this case unfolds, up to not be on the hook for eternity.
Exactly.
For the general.
That's right. And we shouldn't have to pay their attorney's fee because they were defending against negligence claims against them, not vicarious liability claims. In other words, they had separate claims brought against them. The policy considerations ordinance are to encourage parties to maintain responsibility for their own negligence, for their own liability, and to maintain a safe workplace. If you allow a general contractor to put a provision in that says we're absolved of any liability for damages or attorney's fees and or attorney's fees, then the general has no incentive, or less incentive, I should say, to keep the workplace safe.
You would argue in this fact pattern that it's not really just an issue of causing more on the state, but you have no reason anyway because they're too direct.
Correct. Their attorney's fees are incurred for defending the Davidson's claims against them. The focus should be whether the plaintiff is making the Davidson's claim.
But that's not a proposition of argument.
No, the proposition is simply that you don't need to wait until the underlying suit is finished. Because there's so many uncertainties with how that can come out. The outcome of the suit, the liability outcome, does not necessarily reflect whether this party was negligent or not. A better approach is to allow the party to make that assessment early in the case. And let's assume if a well-drafted, as most indemnity provisions are, it's a well-drafted provision that says if the sub is negligent, they're responsible, and if the general is responsible, negligent, they're responsible for that. It clearly divides that out. Then you don't have a problem. But where it's ambiguous, the parties should be able to resolve
that. I want to go to the question whether it's ambiguous. I have the same reading of the contract clause, I think, as Justice Piper does. It seems to me, and the appellee says that the work, the term the work in that clause, means work performed by the general, by the sub, by you, right? How does this, I read this as the clause as saying that if the general is sued because of work that the sub has performed, that the sub will hold harmless the general, but not that the sub will hold harmless the general for suits against the general for work that the sub didn't perform, which doesn't seem to me to violate the, doesn't seem to me this clause then violates 2305.31.
I think it's broader than that. We interpret it much broader. It says that the sub has to indemnify and hold harmless the general for any damages, including attorney's fees, arising directly or indirectly from the operations carried on for the completion of the work.
Yeah, how is the, I can't, the copy of the contract that's attached to my brief is ill, I can't read it.
Very small.
How is the work defined
the
in the contract?
Yes, it's defined as 8 separate items. But 3 of those items were work obligations of other subcontractors. We did the plumbing work. There were other items in there that included other subcontractors or the general contractor's obligations.
So
arguably, we could have been responsible for another subcontractor's improper work that was covered under the definition of work.
Your argument is that we cannot confine the term the work to just the work of the sub. Because
exactly.
Of
the work that is defined in the contract to include at least 3 other items which we had no control of. So
who did Michael work for?
He worked for Trinity Industries.
So he wasn't for Bibby or for Ruley?
Correct. He fell in a hole, was injured, sued both parties for their individual negligence, no vicarious liability. And then Bibby, the general contractor, made a cross claim against us.
Did his injuries occur in the course of his employment?
Yes.
He received workers' compensation?
Yes.
So the question is, the additional damages, who pays them, Bibby or Ruley, and that's really in
well,
31.
They might have to pay the attorney's fees. We have to pay the damages. We were found.
Yeah, $1,500. Yeah.
And you have an awkward situation here. The verdict was $1,500 on a $100,000 claim.
Yeah, with 35% contrib negligence.
So the verdict was $900.
How much are the attorney's fees?
Well, it's like $20,000, $25,000, something like that.
Good lawyers.
Well,
the damage
we
is the cost.
We wouldn't be here, though. We could have filed early on, asking Judge Stapleton in Brown County to make a determination. And if he had said, I think this is void, or it's not void, we probably would have assumed a defense, but let's say he felt it was enforceable. And that's it. Well, we would have assumed a defense, and we wouldn't be here today. So it allowed the parties to make an assessment early on. Normally, so this is a very poorly drafted contract, poorly drafted indemnity provision. Normally, if you have a well-drafted provision, there's no question about it. They always include attorney's fees. It always says damages, including but not limited to reasonable attorney's.
How does even a well-drafted provision get around the statute?
By making sure that the general is not seeking indemnity for its own negligence. As long as
so that's the only distinction.
Sure, if it's clearly drafted, I think that's the distinction. But where it's broad enough, and it says you might have to pay for our negligence, even if we have partial, a small bit of negligence, as Kendall said, even if the provision would provide indemnity for just a portion of the negligence, it's void on its face. And there's nothing in the statute. We just focus on the statute. There's nothing in the statute, 2305.31, that says you have to wait until the outcome of the case. We can decide this. Our position will be you can decide this case simply looking at the statute and the contract at issue, determining it's void, which even the Court of Appeals agreed, and that's the end of the case.
Thank you, Mr. Crusoe. Mr. Kenney.
Thank you, Mayor. Please, the Court. I'm Jeff Kenney, representing GA 50. I think there's two issues in this case. The first one is the smaller issue. Does our contract clause violate 2305.31?
That's the issue.
And we don't believe it does. We were not negligent in this case.
But that's the reason why you say it doesn't violate is because of how it all shook out, that you weren't found to not be negligent. And I'm having a bit of problem with the argument in that the statute is unusual. It doesn't prohibit certain kinds of conduct. It doesn't say thou shalt not indemnify where you're negligent. Rather, it is unusual in that it says any contract that purports to indemnify for your own negligence is void. So it doesn't really go to the conduct, this statute. It says contracts that try to do it. It's essentially the statute tells us, look at the contract. Don't look at what really happened because we're not concerned with the conduct.
Right, and I think if you analyze any contract, I think if I gave this contract to 50 different times,
yeah.
Judges, you'd get 50 different opinions as well as void.
I know, but your voidness arises from the conduct. It's only void in your mind. I mean, it's only not void in your mind based on the ultimate decision that your client was found not negligent. But the contract did seek to have your client protected, negligent or not.
I think, I'm not going to say that the contract couldn't be read.
I think everybody agreed to that.
Right.
But we're not, if you were saying to us, you know, I want you to look at the language of this contract and find that it really wasn't an indemnification of our, you know, but I'm thinking that's not what you're asking, not saying. You're not saying the words or the text of this doesn't purport to indemnify. Rather, you are saying, the way it all worked out, it didn't commit the sin that the statute was meant to prevent.
Well, I would also argue that the language of the contract doesn't violate 2305. We addressed that early on.
Okay. Because?
Because it talks about the contract in this case was Jules G.
Okay.
It talks about the work. The work was delineated. There were some references about other work being performed by other contractors. But the work, I think, is specific enough to indicate that it applies to Joe Goldberg, not to GA 54, not to McDaniel Backhoe Service Door, or any of the other subs that worked on this project. That's why I think the language itself, it has that question. We probably filed a motion for summary judgment, not only issue of liability, but also an indemnification issue.
Counsel, let's move then. I think I understand why you would have this person. I don't understand why you consider that the board would control what was involved. That probably would be enough to get a private statute. Let me ask this. Who was responsible for OSHA safety and those type of things on the project? Your client or
the general contractor?
And this person fell into a, I'd say, an unguarded hole.
Correct.
What was the theory of the client's job against your client?
They supervised the control of the actions themselves. They provide a safe work environment.
Here between the Edison case and this case? The certified question to us, to answer, is whether a hold harmless clause violates 31 on its face is enforceable pursuant to Kendall. If the clause is applied, will not result in indemnification of a party's own negligence. Doesn't the statute answer that question?
It
says it's void if it indemnifies your own negligence. They set the proposition up that there is no negligence.
I think that that's a question that I've pondered many times about this case. I don't think the two standards, one established by the legal system and Lucas County, and one established by the 12th district, is that different?
They're not irreconcilable, certainly.
I agree. I think that both
that's what I think.
Can be utilized to say, look at the language.
And each time it's a factual question.
I think it is.
In a question of law. I mean, the statute's very clear what it says, and that question. I mean, if I were writing, I guess I'd be tempted to say, this is what they certified. Answer is, go see 0.31. Because it says it's void if. And your question is, that there is, the question propounded is, the party's own negligence is not there. It's not indemnified against.
Perhaps a different way to look at that expression that I propose is not that you find it void if there is negligence, but that you find the clause is not applicable.
Right.
Clause read is not void, it's not applicable.
Right.
Because you are negligent.
Right. And I think whether or not it ultimately would be enforceable depends upon the underlying cases. As in this case, we found not negligent, therefore I believe we're entitled to the identification of the attorney to be done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kenny. Mr. Crusoe, you've used your time, but you see 30 seconds.
I'd just like to read very quickly what the contract does about the work which I'm referring to. It includes 8 different items, which include the following. Exhaust fan furnished and installed by others. Wrapping a sanitary sewer with 1-inch Amiflex covering is included. Excavation by others. Electrical controls and wiring by others. The by others is part of the work, referring to other contractors or other employees of the general. So it's clearly purporting, and the keyword is purporting, because that implies a focus on the contract. It purports to indemnify for some of the work which the subcontractor is not doing. I get the impression, in actuality, that the appellee agrees with us that you do have to focus on the contract first. But in this case, even the Court of Appeals agreed that it was arguably void, as did the trial court. So therefore, we don't even reach the second issue. And I would argue that Toledo Edison is much different than the 12th District's reasoning, because in Toledo Edison, they specifically said that the outcome is irrelevant to the contract interpretation, whereas the 12th District said the outcome is dispositive of the contract interpretation, or maybe dispositive. So I think you do have two fundamental different approaches, and I think our approach makes more sense and ultimately will serve to reduce expenses, reduce judicial time, and allow the parties to make an assessment of their risk early in the case and minimize their costs.
Thank you, Mr. Crusoe.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Marshal, please adjourn the court.
All rise. Hear me, hear me, hear me. This open session of the All Supreme Court.